when you have great coaches. Then after you have great coaches, you get great players. You have a great organization. And you tell them one thing. Just win, baby.
Let's go, Raider Nation, and welcome to Just Pod Baby with your host, Evan Grote, your home for Raiders news, notes, and information. You can follow me on Twitter at egrote5, and as always, you can check out more of my work over at silverandblackpride.com. Later in the show, I'll be joined by Chris Tomlinson, who covers the Vikings beat for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. I'm going to start this week's show off with a brief recap of last week's 28-10 loss to the Chiefs, and I apologize, I wasn't able to get the post-game podcast out last week. But I do have some thoughts that I want to share with you about the game. There's not much left to be said that hasn't already, you know, been discussed. But you know, it was a very lackluster performance by the Raiders, especially in from the second quarter on. They got off to a great start in the game, you know, getting some points on the board in their first two drives of the game. One a touchdown, one a field goal, and the defense was able to force the Chiefs into some early punts, which was nice to see. But in the second quarter, the wheels completely fell off for the Raiders. And the Chiefs scored four unanswered touchdowns in the quarter, three of which were scored in a span of 5 minutes and 51 seconds. It was just a complete, bombardment, if you will. Two of those drives started on their own 5-yard line, which was very disheartening to see, especially the way the defense started the game. You thought that they, you know, had a chance to maybe keep them in the game. At halftime, the Raiders trailed 28-10. And that's the way the score would stay for the remainder of the game. The Chiefs really call off the dogs, in my opinion. I felt like they could have probably put up a few more points had they really wanted to. Derek Carr threw two second-half interceptions that really derailed any chance that the Raiders had of making a comeback. There are a couple other notes that I want to point out from the game. The Raiders had a few guys get banged up, including Trent Brown and Dwayne Harris, who were not able to finish the game. Brown with a knee and Harris with an ankle. Tyrell Williams, Josh Jacobs also dealt with some injuries on the offensive side of the ball. And on defense, Vontaze Burfict, Gerrion Conley, and Curtis Riley have also been dealing with some injuries throughout the week. I did have a chance to take a look at the injury report today, the final injury report. Let me just pull that up again real quick. Brown was a full participant today after not participating on Wednesday and Thursday. He's listed as questionable. Burfict was limited on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. He's questionable. Conley he's good to go after being limited. Harris is out. Harris is going to be out this week, but they did go out and sign a new return man, speedster, out of Green Bay. So he'll take his spot. I believe his name was Trevor Davis, I think it was. I don't have that note in front of me. Josh Jacobs, he was limited Wednesday, Thursday, full participant Friday. He is good to go. Corey Legit may make his first appearance as a Raider. J.J. Nelson is active. Curtis Riley, who I mentioned, was full participant Thursday and Friday. He should be good to go. Tyrell Williams also should be good to go after a full practice. There were a couple guys who popped up late on the injury report during the week, and that was Denzel Good and LaMarcus Joyner. They're both limited participants on Friday in practice and are both listed as questionable. So there's some updates to the injury report for this week. Now, I do have a few other comments I'd like to make about the game, last week's game, that is, and that's, I want to talk a little bit about Derek Carr and his performance. And unfortunately, when the Raiders win games, all the talk is about Derek Carr, and when the Raiders lose games, some of the times the talk is about Carr. And I think that's one of those situations here. And this is the problem that I have with Carr, and I believe many other kind of had similar feelings when it comes to this. At times, he just tries to do too much. That's really all you can say. He just tries to force the issue too much. Those two second-half interceptions were critical, especially that first one. And I don't want to sit here and blame him for those interceptions. His explanations as to what happened were, have been well documented at this point. But I do want to kind of take a look at it from a different perspective, especially that first interception. So let's think about that for a minute. The Raiders, early in the third quarter, the Raiders had an opportunity to kind of change momentum in the game by cutting the lead to 28-17. They were looking at a first and goal from the Chiefs' four-yard line. If you recall, Josh Jacobs had just broken off that 51-yard run. The Chiefs, you know, stacked the box, okay? They were anticipating run, and Carr noticed that. He also noticed he had Tyrell Williams out to the left-hand side, one-on-one, and it, you know, it was a mismatch. Carr changed the play at the line, gave Williams a hand signal. The problem is Williams didn't see the hand signal, so there was a big-time miscommunication there. Carr throws a fade route. Williams is almost kind of getting ready to, you know, block, essentially. Wasn't expecting the pass, and result is an interception. You know, you want my opinion on this, and I'm no offensive coordinator, but I do understand the basics of football. You got to run the ball there. You got to run the ball there. Jacobs was gashing the defense, the run defense for the Chiefs all game long. He averaged 6 yards a carry, or excuse me, 8 yards a carry during the game. And to me, this is just one of those examples of Derek Carr just overthinking it. Again, you got a first and goal from the four-yard line. Let your running back, give him a chance. Give him a chance. That's all I'm saying. Even if you get stuffed on first down, you live to play another day or another down. And you can, you know, look to throw the ball on second or third down. But I just felt like that's a play there where you keep the play as is, and you give Jacobs a chance to score there. We all love Carr's passion. You love his desire to win, and you know he's all about team first. You know, you can't deny any of that. But you know, sometimes you just wish he would not try to overthink the game and just make it a little bit easier on himself. So those are my thoughts about Derek Carr. Now I do want to also talk about another major topic this week was a potential trade for Jalen Ramsey. Last week on the show, I was talking about a potential trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick, and now this week it's Ramsey. Fitzpatrick was dealt to the Steelers for a first round pick earlier this week, so that's no longer an option. But Jalen Ramsey, he's been linked to several different teams, obviously, for many reasons. He's a great, talented player. But I do have some thoughts on that. Now, if you follow me on Twitter, I've been pretty open and honest about my opinion and my thoughts on the Raiders making a deal for Jalen Ramsey. And if you haven't seen me on Twitter, then you know I'm going to share my thoughts now. So obviously the talent that Ramsey has, you can't deny it. He's one of the top two or three corners in the league. He's got everything you look for. He's got shutdown ability. He's 24 years old. He's in his prime, and he's got the swagger that you look for. You know, sometimes a little too much swagger, but he does have that swagger that you look for. All that being said, he's also got those diva tendencies. And you know, there's several players in the league who have these tendencies that really, you know, you just, because their talent is so great, you know, sometimes coaches and general managers are more willing to put up with those types of, you know, tendencies. And Antonio Brown was one of those players. Obviously, he crossed the line. But again, and I don't want you sitting here, you know, listening to me talk saying, how is this guy sitting here comparing Antonio Brown to Jalen Ramsey? That's not what I'm doing. That's not what I'm doing by any means. All I'm simply saying is that Ramsey has showed some tendencies early in his career that, for me, you know, I'm thinking maybe could develop into something else, you know? So that's all I'm saying. There's been a few red flags in my opinion, and you may not agree with that, and that's fine. Everyone has their own opinion. ESPN put out a great article this week, and it was a timeline of Jalen Ramsey's tenure with the Jaguars, and it kind of pointed out several different incidents along the way. And I just want to highlight a couple events that were noted in the article for you. Starting on January 1st, 2017, after the Jaguars were defeated 24-20 to the Colts, Ramsey and a couple of his teammates went on to complain to the media, in the media, I should say, about the way they were used throughout the 2016 season. Now, if you recall, the 2016 season was Ramsey's rookie year. So you essentially have a player who is, you know, just completed his rookie year, and here he is, you know, out in the media, you know, bashing his, you know, coaching staff, essentially. Ramsey went as far as going to call for a clean sweep of the defensive coaching staff. So again, to me, that's just a really bad look, especially for a player that young. January 24th, 2018, Ramsey again is critical of the coaching staff, this time his defensive coordinator, and his decision to keep the Jaguars in more zone coverages during the fourth quarter of the AFC Championship game against the Patriots, which they eventually would lose. So that's the second time now in two seasons that he was critical of his coaching staff openly, you know, in the media. November 11th, 2018, the Jaguars again lost a close game to the Colts, 29-26. And this was a rare occasion where Ramsey didn't have a great game. He had three blown coverages, in fact, and two of them resulted in a touchdown. The next morning, he once again took to social media, this time, and made some posts that, you know, began to fuel some speculation that he was unhappy with the Jaguars and wanted to play elsewhere. Days after that, Ramsey contradicted his social media post, saying that, you know, he did definitely want to spend his entire career with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And so there was a lot of drama that came from that. There were rumors were beginning to swirl that he could possibly be traded. And as we know, he was never dealt, but again, just some more drama. And that kind of leads us to where we are now with Ramsey. Last week, September 15th, Ramsey was in a sideline altercation with his head coach, Doug Marrone. And those of you who don't know yet, I'm sure you all do, but the reason why that altercation began is because Ramsey was upset that Marrone did not challenge a three-yard completion to DeAndre Hopkins. Ramsey was urging Marrone to throw the challenge flag, and Ramsey, or not, not Ramsey, excuse me, Marrone refused to do that. The two had to be separated. It didn't look good. It was ugly. And after the game, as you know, Ramsey is now requesting a trade again. So that's kind of where we are right now with the Jalen Ramsey saga in Jacksonville. And now one thing you got to keep in mind is Ramsey's 24 years old. He's just now starting his fourth season in the league. So, yes, these are minor things, but again, they're red flags. I don't care what you say, they're red flags. The sideline altercations, calling out your coaching staff, being suspended for violating team rules. No matter what you say, these are distractions, and these are red flags. Bottom line, players should never be going to, you know, social media or any media outlet to be throwing their coaches under the bus. And the same goes for coaches. They should keep all that stuff in-house. You handle it face-to-face, man-to-man, behind closed doors. So I'm just going to end it with these thoughts. I'm not going to sit here and say that I would not welcome Jalen Ramsey on the team, but, you got to be very, very cautious. Make sure you're doing your homework on him. Make sure that you're not overpaying. I know the price for him right now, I've heard, is two first-round picks. I think that's way too much to give up. I think a first and a third would be more reasonable. Of course, you're going to have to negotiate a new contract with him. I would make sure that you're making it very team-friendly, where you have certain clauses in there. If expectations aren't met, there's an out in there for the Raiders, similar to what they had with Antonio Brown. Those are a few thoughts on a possible trade for Jalen Ramsey, as well as the Raiders' Week 2 loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. After this quick break is my interview with Chris Tomlinson, who covers the Vikings for the St. Paul Pioneer Press.
Blue 42! Blue 42, sit! Hey!
On the line with me is Vikings beat writer Chris Tomlinson, who covers the team for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Chris, I appreciate you joining me tonight. How you doing?
Hey, doing well. Thanks for having me.
Now, it's a big game for both teams. Both teams are 1-1, especially for the Raiders. The Raiders are about to begin a brutal stretch here of five games on the road. They're playing at London, so it's going to be a very difficult stretch for the Raiders. Both teams needed to, looking to get a win here. I want to start this interview off by getting an update on the injury report for the Vikings. I had a chance to look at it today, the final report, and I did see there's a few guys listed as questionable. Anthony Barr, Ben Gidden, Mike Hughes, and Pat Elflein. What is the expectation that you're hearing from Mike Zimmer about the possibility of these four playing? And should any of them not be available, what kind of impact does that make?
Well, Mackenzie Alexander has been ruled out. He's their nickelback. It'll be the second straight game he's missed due to an elbow injury. Anthony Barr is questionable. Zimmer said the other day he thinks he'll play. Barr told me today that he's optimistic that he will play, so I imagine he will. Gedeon, he might not. He has a groin injury just like Barr does, but Eric Wilson filled in well for him at weak side linebacker last Sunday, so I don't think that would be a huge loss. And Pat Elflein missed last Sunday's game due to a knee injury, but he, after being limited all week in practice, he was a full participant today, so that could be encouraging for the Vikings that he comes back. So other than Alexander, who's definitely out, Gedeon probably has the most chance of not playing, but I wouldn't be surprised if the other two guys play.
Okay, very good. You know, I'm going to start with the offensive side of the ball here with a few of my first questions. Delvin Cook's off to a red-hot start. Currently leads the NFL in rushing with 265 yards. What kind of workload do you expect to see from Cook against the Raiders this week?
Well, that's what they want to do, is they want to run the ball, and they've been running the ball well, much better than I thought maybe they would. I mean, they said during the offseason that was their tough goal, but I don't think anybody really thought they were going to gain 370 yards in the first two games. That's the most yards in the first two games of a season the Vikings have had since 1966. And if they weren't behind much of that Packer game last weekend, in which they lost 21-16, they might have even rushed for more yards. They had 198 in that game. They're looking for balance. They want Dalvin Cook, obviously, to have another 100-yard type game, but they also wanted to set up the pass. Kirk Cousins is coming off his worst game of his 18 since joining the Vikings, 14 out of 32, two interceptions, one lost fumble. So they're definitely looking for Cousins to bounce back, and one of the keys will be keeping that running game churning, just open up the play action and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that was actually a perfect segue into my next question. Kirk Cousins in the passing game has been struggling a bit. In week one against the Falcons, he was limited to 10 throws, which he completed 8 of them. So I guess from that standpoint, that's not terrible. But in week two, he did struggle badly, completing only 44% of his passes with 2 interceptions. So my question is, what's going on with Cousins? And why the slow start? And do you think this is a week that, against the Raiders, can he finally get himself going here?
Well, it's the right time for him to try to bounce back. I mean, they're favored by 9 points. They're playing at home, and he said it best the other day that if he keeps playing like he did last Sunday, he won't be the Vikings quarterback for long. Yeah, I mean, he's had a propensity in his career, and including last season, to throw some clutch interceptions, not step up in big games, that sort of thing. But he's usually had good numbers otherwise. But his numbers were terrible against the Packers. So not only did he throw the 2 interceptions, he completed about 44% of his passes, and his previous low with the Vikings was 55%. He had the lowest passer rating since he's been with the Vikings. I think it was about 52.9, and his previous low was in the 70s. So it's more than just the interceptions, including the terrible one he threw in the fourth quarter in the end zone. He was inaccurate much of the game and missed a lot of open receivers. So he definitely is going to need to turn it around on Sunday for the Vikings' sake.
I'm sure he's licking his chops if he went back and watched a little bit of that Raiders film last week when Patrick Mahomes just completely shredded that Raiders secondary. I want to jump over to the defense now. The Raiders coaching staff has made a lot this week about the continuity that the Vikings have had over the years on defense. It's not as common in today's NFL to see a group of guys stay together for so long. There's often a lot of turnover in the league now. How do you think that continuity, having played together for so long, how does that help the Vikings on defense?
Well, you'd think it would help more than they showed last Sunday. They were awful in the first quarter. I mean, the Packers took a 21-0 lead in the first minute of the second quarter. The first two touchdowns, they marched up and down the field. The third one was a short field when Kirk Cousins fumbled. So the defense needed to be a lot better. They were solid in week one. They came out of the gates fast, sacked Matt Ryan of Atlanta four times. But for as long as the defense has been together, there still are periods of inconsistency. I mean, they were absolutely great 2 years ago when they were number one in the NFL in both scoring defense and total defense. But then they got off to a lackluster start last year when the Vikings started out 1-2-1. And, you know, that's what they're hoping, is that they don't have a rough start like they did last season. So I imagine they'll be tuned in and focused on Sunday, but still it shouldn't be that inconsistent at this juncture of playing together so long.
Another thing that Gruden was pointing out earlier in the week about the Vikings defense is he says it all starts with the pass rush for them. So what can you tell us about that Vikings pass rush, and how has it looked early in the season?
Well, they had 50 sacks last year, tied for third in the NFL, and they probably will have more this season, because last year Everson Griffin, a three-time Pro Bowl selection prior to last year, missed five games with mental health issues. Danielle Hunter had 14.5 sacks last year, and he's just going to continue to get better. And it's a formidable defensive line. You got Linville Joseph, who's a two-time Pro Bowl selection, anchoring the middle. He's more of a run stopper at nose tackle, but he can certainly get some sacks. He had one in the first game this season. So, yeah, a lot. And Anthony Barr is going to be coming off the edge more this season, most likely as at linebacker. I mean, the first play of the season, he came off the edge and had a pivotal sack against Atlanta a couple weeks ago. So throw him into the mix, and wouldn't be surprised if they have more than 50 sacks this year.
Yeah, and one thing to keep an eye on for the Raiders, their starting right tackle Trent Brown has been kind of dealing with a knee injury this week in practice. It does look like he will play. He's questionable, but he was a full participant today, so that's something to keep an eye on. So far, Tyrell Williams and tight end Darren Waller have been Derek Carr's two top targets, and I know that the Vikings have a pair of former first-round draft picks at cornerback, and they also have another first-round draft pick in safety Harrison Smith. Which corner do you anticipate will be matched up against Williams? I'm not sure, you know, exactly, you know, do the Vikings corners travel, or they, you know, will they stay on their same side, or how will they look to defend Williams? And this is kind of a two-part question. You know, how does Waller pose a matchup, you know, problem for the Vikings?
Well, Xavier Rhodes historically is matched up against the opposing team's best receiver. He's been doing that with regularity for the last six seasons, although he's coming off an off year last year, an injury riddled year. So he had some problems last year. So, but, you know, if they want to go the route of putting Rhodes on the top guy, I mean, he would be the guy that they would use.
Now, does Harrison Smith usually match up against tight ends for the Vikings?
Harrison Smith plays all over. That's what makes him so good in a four-time Pro Bowl selection. He's listed as a strong safety, but he basically plays both. I mean, he'll go up on the line of scrimmage, battle tight ends. He'll stay back sometimes, and then other times he'll blitz. Great tackler, great run stopper. I mean, that's what makes him so good, is he plays everywhere.
Yeah, they really do have stars at all three levels on that Vikings defense. Last week, the Vikings were gashed a little bit in the run game. The Packers gave up, giving up 144 yards to the Packers on 33 carries, but nonetheless, that's a lot of yards. Is this an area, you know, of vulnerability for the Vikings defense, and would this be an area, you know, where the Raiders should be looking to attack for, you know, some success?
Well, they're usually pretty good against the run. I mean, it was just a strange lull how they started out. the way they did. The Packers had great success in the first quarter and the early part of the second, and then they had a late drive too, where maybe the Vikings defense was probably starting a little bit tired. It was a bit of a hot day there, and they weren't subbing in as much. But I think, and especially at home, they're usually much better also against the run at home. So, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they are able to shut down the Raiders' running game on Sunday.
Okay, last question I have for you here, Chris. I'd just like to get a game prediction for you. You got a score and maybe an explanation.
Well, I picked in the paper 23-10 Vikings, so I guess I'll have to stay with that one.
23-10 Vikings. All right, there you have it. Chris, that's all I got for you. I do appreciate you giving me a few minutes of your time. I hope you enjoy the game, and thank you very much.
All right, hey, really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Yep, keep up the good work. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye. All right, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Chris Tomlinson, who covers the Minnesota Vikings for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. And there's a few things I want to point out from that interview there with him. He does expect Anthony Barr to play. That was the big one that I was, wondering about, because I did see that he was listed as questionable. It does sound like he will play for sure, which is going to definitely create some problems for the Raiders, especially if Trent Brown is, not 100%. And the other key point that he made there is that the Vikings defense tends to play a little better at home. We know that that new stadium up there in Minnesota is a very tough environment for road teams. It gets very loud there. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on, and he expects, as he said, a 23-10 victory for the Vikings. Well, that is going to do it for this week's edition of Just Pod Baby with Evan Grote. I hope everyone enjoyed the show. I want to encourage you all to check out all the great content that's available both on the Silver and Black Pride Podcast Network as well as silverandblackpride.com. A lot of great work being produced for you there, so be sure to check it out. Also, a reminder, since the Raiders are playing in Minnesota, it's an early start this week. It's a 1 p.m. Eastern time start, and it'll be a 10 a.m. Pacific time start for you West Coasters out there. Be sure to adjust those Sunday morning plans so that you're not missing out on a play. I hope everyone enjoys the game, and I hope everyone has a great weekend. And as always, go Raiders!